Hi there, Conscious Living, Empower Radio. I'm Wendy. Thank you for tuning in. Yeah, I know it's been a while. Okay. I've had people asking, when's the new show? When's the new show? And I've just said, I don't know. Well, it's coming. It's coming. Basically, it's coming. And here it is. So much has happened. And so a quick catch up. I do have a guest and I'm looking forward to talking to her. This is a really incredible story. It's the near death, but it's not. Okay. So we'll get into that in a minute or two. First, I do want to say the indications I get, and this is one of the things that is ongoing in my life, all these unconventional little cues and directs. Yesterday morning, 3 a.m., the little telepathic thing of go outside and look up right now. Okay. It's 3 a.m. Do I really want to do this? Yeah. Right. So these little prompts, I've learned that there's usually a payoff if I do it, if I connect. And so with that, what I did was decide, well, which door? Back door, front door, side door, which door? Well, the dog is standing at the front door, so that made the decision for me. I open up the door. The minute I open up the door, I'm looking straight out east. I see two shooting stars. Okay, so there it is. And the prompt was, this is big. It's really big. And so a lot of energy right now, huge energy waves coming through. People are responding to that, whether they know it or not. You're either going to be tired, you're overamped. Everybody has their own sense with this. So that was, I stood outside for a little while thinking, well, maybe, because the Perseids this time of year, the 15th, the 13th, I think is better. It depends on when the full moon is out because that blocks it. But it's the fantastic light show. And that was the one I had a connect with after John Denver died. About a year or so after, I was talking with him, you know, that little telepathic thing. And he said it was his favorite time of year. And I'd interviewed him, and I didn't know that about him. I was a fan, you know, as a kid. And when I interviewed him, that was fantastic. And one of the things that I still had no clue about was the fact that he really did enjoy being there in the Rockies and watching the Perseids. Beautiful view from there. Anyway, so that was a little thing I found out. So this is that time of year when big things happen. And so then the other thing was a couple of weeks before I had another stepping outside that front door thing where you just, you know, you're at home. You're not expecting anything. I happened to be looking at the right place at the right time and saw a darting shadow. Now, I mean, something that you see and you can't see. It was shaded in. The reason I think I could see it was because there were beautiful white puffy clouds and the blue. And so it made an imprint that should not have been there. And as I look at it, my husband had stepped out with me and I'm saying, Andy, did you see this? And as I do that exact instant, of course, I don't have time to tell him where to look. I look back and it darts the other way. Each time it darts, it's only visible for a second. And so I see it and then it leaves an after image. And it's not smoke. It's not haze. It's something that is absolutely moving of its own accord. Now, I decided after talking with one of the local MUFON people, interestingly enough, I had an interview with her the next day and she said people were seeing other things. And when they developed the pictures, these shadows were also there. She said, you need to report it. Otherwise, I wouldn't have. There was that little push that said, and I thought, you know what? The more I don't report my stuff, the more we miss opportunities. And so I reported it and case number and all that, put it on Wendy's Coffee House. And I put the little image. It isn't an art piece. Okay. Just so you know. But those are the things that are happening right now. It's amazing. It's unquantifiable. All these things are unknown, unexplained. There are experiences. And as we gather together and share our experiences, we learn that others also are experiencing this and we're not imagining, fictionalizing, or in some way, shape, or form, not saying. Okay. So here we go. My guest, who's had some extraordinary experiences, is in a unique position to share something that I think a lot of people are curious about in terms of an after-death or near-death experience. Her brother died in 1983, and she really didn't get into any of this until recently when she's getting a lot of support for actually sharing and putting it down. Paula Lenz and the experience she had, it was the prompt to write the book, Driving to Infinity. So Paula, I'm so glad you're available. This is, I think, with the shared death experience, this is the one that that's the new piece of the equation that people are just beginning to connect the dots on. And your story is a wonderful illustration of that. So thank you. I appreciate you sharing and welcome to Conscious Living.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on your show.
When you first experienced that, and this is one of these things where people don't expect, your brother had died and you were driving, you're in the car, and all of a sudden there's a shift. Can you explain that? Because this is the definition, basically, of a shared death experience.
Yes. Let me just start out by pointing out a few things. That this part of my life was not revealed until just a couple of years ago when I published the book. But this year, I believe, marks 36 years since his passing. And I'm the oldest child in the family. My brother was 4 years younger than me. And my sister, though, is 10 years younger. And so my brother and I essentially had our childhood together. We grew up together versus, you know, by the time I was 10 years old, that's when my sister was born. So that being said, I'm driving to my grandparents. This was 3 days after my brother's funeral. And as it happened too, I was driving his personal truck because he was actually killed in a company truck. So I'm in his truck. I'm by myself 3 days after the funeral, taking some flowers out to my grandparents' house. And as I'm driving along, suddenly I realized that I was seeing 360 degrees around me. I could see everything around me as I'm driving down the road. And I didn't know what was happening, obviously, but suddenly I saw that my brother was at my right shoulder, and he looked like a pattern of lights, but it still had his features. And when I realized he was there, then he began speaking to me telepathically. And he told me, he said, "I don't want you to be sad. I want you to be happy." But because he said he was really happy where he was. But most of all, he wanted me to know what life was like for him now. And he explained to me that he was on another plane of being, and that it had simply been time for him to leave. And then suddenly, I was no longer in my body. I left, I went with him, and that I was in this total state of consciousness with him. He was still with me. In fact, he stayed with me throughout this entire experience. And at first, I saw what I would say looked like a landscape. It almost looked like the negative of a photo, but that didn't last very long. And then after that, I realized that it was almost as though I were out in the middle of the universe. And at that moment, I realized that I was experiencing infinity and eternity. And as this progressed, the first wave that I felt come over me was this huge wave of peace. And the second wave that came over me during this time was that I was experiencing being all knowledge in the universe, all knowledge for the entire history of the universe. And then the last wave that came over me was this all-encompassing energy of love, which I call spirit. And at that moment, the phrase came to me of the peace that passes understanding. And when all of those three things came together, I knew that everything and everyone in the universe and throughout time, that we were all one, that everything is one with this energy of love or spirit. There's not anything out there or here or among any of us that is not a part of this. We are all one. And I understood that there just was no separation of anything from this all-encompassing spirit, or what might be what some people call God. And all we have to do is open up to spirit and allow that supreme consciousness and love into our own consciousness. And again, I just can't emphasize it enough that the message was and is that everything and everyone is this spirit of universal love, and that everything and everyone is connected throughout the entire universe. And during this time, I just loved being in this complete state of consciousness only. It was just such freedom for me. And the other message I got while I was experiencing this was that I was home. And I did not care one thing about going back into my body or my life. To me, this was the natural state of being.
Yeah,
this is where I wanted to stay. And when I began thinking like that, I began, I'll say, wishing away. I felt, you know, as though I were just moving very rapidly further away, because I knew at some level that this was just the beginning of the afterlife, that there was another level, there were more things to go on to, and right. That's where I wanted to go.
Right. Yeah, okay, and, but we'll interrupt this reverie to say you were still driving your car.
Yes, I was driving. So at that point, though, my brother, when I began rushing away, I mean, he was still with me. But at that point, he said to me, "No, you can't go yet. It's not your time." And he, I can only say that it was like he exerted his energy on me and pushed me back down. Mm-hmm. And I could see myself coming back down into my body, into the truck that I was driving. And I felt like I just landed in my body with a thud. And the first thing I thought to myself was, wow, being in this body is so confining.
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't believe how confining it was to be in this body. But, you know, at that point, I felt such peace, and I knew my brother was okay and alive. And I just had great peace as I continued driving on to my grandparents. And it was a feeling that lasted for me the rest of, you know, the entire day. I went on to my grandparents, but I, of course, I didn't know. I just thought, what has happened to me? Mm-hmm. And I didn't say anything to my grandparents about that. But it was interesting that I felt like I could see from my brother's viewpoint how he was viewing us, because that's how I viewed my grandparents, in that I saw their deep grief. And even though I told them I felt like my brother, you know, that Donnie was happy and he was still alive and everything was good, it was as though I never really said that.
Yeah.
And I could see how the grief, you know, just blocks out a lot of things. But after that day, the next day, I really fell back into a very deep grief over him. And that that grief and going through that process lasted a really long time for me. It was just such a deep grief over it.
Okay, that's what I want to go back to, because here you just had this incredible epiphany, an absolutely life-shifting epiphany. But being physical and having all the emotions and knowing your brother isn't there, there's no more hugs, there's no more fun stuff, and you write about how close you were in the book. That is, I think, human. And that's where people who are going through these kinds of experiences, you have this step out where you get this extraordinary vision and you know, and yet it isn't integrated and it doesn't make the grief, which you continued to, and you still have that little twinge, that didn't go away. And so here's going back into your body and life and having to deal with what's happening on this plane. That had to be really, life altering in itself, but challenging on that level to have that experience and yet not be able to integrate it at that point. Does that make sense?
Yes. And that's it exactly. I would imagine most people would think automatically, well, wow, you had this great experience with your brother. You know what it's like on the other side. Seems like that should have sustained you. And maybe for some people, it does, who perhaps have experiences with those who have passed on. But for me, as you say, the humanness of it all, you know, the realization. You have to understand, my brother, even though he was the middle child, our brother was the center of our family. He was funny, outgoing. He had lots of friends. Everybody loved him. And when we would have family get-togethers, inevitably, it was always Donnie at the center of funny stories that he was telling and all this. And, you know, life for us, my family, and for his friends, you know, the realization was we were never going to have that kind of interaction with him again, because he wasn't here anymore. And that, as you say, you know, living day to day and knowing that you're never going to have that again, is how do you deal with that? I mean, it's all about love that you have for people. And, you know, he was extremely loved by everyone. And your whole life just changes because where that person was in your life being here is just a big empty space now. It's just never going to be that way again. And truly, our family dynamics, with him not in the picture anymore, it was never the same again. We never had those funny kinds of experiences. And, you know, even when I was in my 20s and already married, and we'd go back to visit parents and stuff, my brother and I would end up on the floor wrestling around like we were still like 10 years old. It was just a funny thing that we always did just to kind of semi-aggravate each other. Mm-hmm. But those kinds of nuances and the experiences were over for our family.
See, I think the biggest challenge, because knowing, you know, and reading your story and the life of the party that he was, the center of the universe, the thing is that he was easy to love. He was easy to love. And so when he said his work was done, he made a big, huge, bold imprint and got a lot of attention and a lot of love. But there are other people here who aren't quite so easy to love. And the other challenges in your life continued because then continued. The marriage that you had at that point shifted. And I do think part of it was you had to keep this bottled inside you. You had nowhere to go with it. And that's just my assumption.
Yes. Yes. Because, you know, I did eventually talk to a couple of my closest friends about this experience. Two or three of them. But except for sharing with those couple of people, this is not something I ever talked about anywhere else.
Yeah.
And And in the meantime, not only, you know, not talking with most people about this experience, you know, in the meantime, my brother continued for the rest of my life, actually, to have outreach to me along the way.
Yeah.
Just to let me know he was checking in on me or he's around, you know, here and there. I've had people ask me, you know, do you think your brother is an earthbound ghost? And I said, no. Not at all.
No.
I think he's a very powerful spirit. And, you know, because of the love that we had and, you know, that he just continues to reach out. But, you know, the other aspect, too, about this experience was that, as you say, it was life altering. I mean, when I came back from this experience, my consciousness and view of life and humanity was never the same.
Yeah,
I could not go back. You know, there were just so many realizations at some level that I had when I was out of body with him. And, you know,
well,
one
your religion,
of those,
the religion changed too, you know, that part of it, the things
yes.
that you had learned that you had been basically incorporated and really just fine with and fit in, like going to church and study groups and singing. I think you played the organ.
Yes, I played piano and organ for church when I was
yeah.
growing up. And,
yeah.
And that was, you know, I think because when I was in that state of consciousness out of body, you know, and being one with all knowledge and everything, then intuitively I knew a lot of things that I'd been taught weren't necessarily exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I knew that they were different than what I had been taught. Not that I go around espousing that sort of thing, but for
right.
me, as you say, the religion versus what I stepped into was spirituality. And,
yeah.
and not being in a particular religion and really viewing humanity differently, how people act. And you look at these things, particularly the things that seem bad or wrong or whatever. And, you know, I just look at them because, you know, they end up blocking the true energy of who we are, which is spirit. And, you know, so these things that happen, it's like, well, these people are not totally opening up to this wonderful, miraculous flow of spirit and energy that we all have access to at all times.
Mm-hmm.
We just, you know, need to open our consciousness to that. But, and again, that whole idea of understanding that everything that exists is one with this great consciousness or this great energy of love that is the creation and manifestation of everything in the universe. But that was definitely a huge shift for me. And it took me, a couple of years before I actually started going to Unity Church after that, because they view our life here as being, we're everyone, regardless of religion or whatever, that everyone is on the road back to spirit. That
okay,
we're,
hang on.
We're all one.
Hang on. We got a minute, so I'm going to take a quick break here. What we're going to do is we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about the fact that your brother continued to make his presence known. Okay? So my
yes.
guest is Paula Lenz, the book Driving into Infinity, Living with My Brother's Spirit, a fantastic story of a spiritually transformative event, experience that changed in an instant with this shared death encounter. And these are the kind of things that I think make life interesting, fascinating, inspiring. And we were also going to get into this MIST, Meld into Spirit. That's another aspect that she shares in her book that I think is really powerful and a way to change, shift your view to see the more of all that is that we're surrounded by every day. Conscious Living and Power Radio, back in a few.
Well, Jason, I've got to tell you, you're pretty much everything this company is looking for in an entry-level candidate.
Great.
Your resume isn't quite what we're used to, but you've got a fantastic work ethic.
Thank you.
And I'm impressed by how you carry yourself.
So, should we talk about the job?
What? The job? Oh, sorry. Yeah, I have no way of recruiting or even meeting you. This interview didn't happen.
It may sound ridiculous, and that's because it kind of is. There's a huge pool of talent your company is missing out on. Meet the grads of life. Who are they? Talent worth knowing about. Young adults of unique determination and experience. An ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or even mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
Man, we really could have used him.
Don't miss out on a resource many innovative companies have already discovered. Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent. Brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
I might look like an adult, like a person who could possibly be a parent, but I have no idea how to talk like one. And everyone knows that if you want to be a parent, you have to sound good when you say things like, "Don't make me turn this car around," or "Because I said so," or "Don't make me come back there." I don't even really know what those things mean, but I know that I actually believed my parents when they said them to me. How did they manage to sound so convincing? Here we go. "Don't make me come back there." Ugh, no, that's not tough enough at all. Kids can sense weakness. "Don't make me come back there." Ooh, yeah, that's better. In fact, that kind of sounded like my dad. Weird.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to listen to you practice your dad voice. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
You are a waste. A loser. Everyone hates you. Why don't you just stay in your car and keep driving? I'm serious. Drive until you run out of gas, then get out of your car and walk until you find someone who doesn't think you're dumber than bricks. Could take a while, but at least all that walking might burn a couple of calories.
You may not witness bullying like this every day. Your kids do. They want to help, but they don't know how. Visit stopbullying.gov to learn safe, simple ways your child can help stop bullying. Be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
Hey, Mom. Why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why is an 11 pronounced 1T1?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza round?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Hi there, it's Conscious Living and Power Radio. I'm Wendy Garrett. Thank you for tuning in. I appreciate your time. Paula Lenz had an extraordinary experience. The death of her brother was absolutely horrifying and in many ways debilitating because of their strong connection. But the cool thing, even though she was the older sister, when he died, he stepped into the older brother role. And so you've heard the first part of the story about how she had that amazing oneness encounter. All right. So then he's still there, kind of pushing and reminding and tweaking just to say you're not alone. That's the part of the story I think is also so fantastic. I've talked with people about this before when, you know, a sibling or a significant other comes back and says, hey, it's not over. I'm here. It's okay. And so how did, when you first noticed or realized, how did you begin to connect the dots that he was still a part of your life?
Well, the first thing that started happening was his best friend had given to my family copies of the really the last photograph that had ever been taken of him, which was a week before his accident. And that photo, I can't tell you how many times, you know, I'd place the photo in the photo area on the shelf or my bookcases, and how many times I would come home and I would find that picture turned down. And I knew then that it was my brother reaching out to tell me that, yes, I'm still around. Look, I'm still alive. But there were many other things that happened in my house at that time. And I still have outreach from him in various ways. But, I would come home from work and I would find that in our dining room, which we hardly ever went into the dining room, but when he had lived with my husband and I at that time, the two of them used to get in there and play this electric football game and, you know, have a drink or two in the evening and just have a crazy time in there. So I would come home and I would find that the chair that he used to sit in for that game would be pulled out from the dining room table. And finally, after a while, and this was happening a couple of times a week, and I finally asked my husband then, was he going in there and doing something? And he said, no, I haven't been in there at all. And I told him, you know, about the chair. But the chair continued to be pulled out like that up until the time we sold the house several years later. Mm-hmm. But, you know, at times when I would lie down to take a nap, close my eyes, I would feel someone sitting down on the bed next to me.
Yeah.
And my eyes would fly open. And of course, you know, there was no one there. But that happened a lot. Also, he had given me one Christmas these little brass Siamese cats. And those were out on the shelf. And I would always find those turned in different directions. And another time when I came home from work, I headed off to our master bedroom and I just stopped dead in my tracks because in the doorway to the master bedroom, there was a chair placed right in the middle of the doorway. And mm-hmm. this chair had come out of the bedroom. It was part of a desk set there. And, you know, that one really blew me away. I thought someone was in the house, but there was no one there. Nothing else, you know, was amiss. But now, interestingly enough, my husband and I were in our TV room, and there was a bookcase or two in there. And on one of the bookcases at the very top shelf, we had some videos of vacations and things like that. And those were very deep shelves, but we're sitting there watching TV. And all of a sudden, from the top shelf comes flying out. It doesn't just fall, okay? It flies out from the shelf halfway across the room and falls down right at our feet. And my husband and I looked at each other like, what is going on? But, you know, the funny thing about that was when he stayed with us this one summer, he and my husband, they were fooling around with a video camera and stuff in that TV room. I can't even remember what they were doing. But it was interesting to me that he chose to do this video thing, you know, when my husband was there. It was just all connected.
Well, and part of it. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, and even my dad and his wife, not long after my brother passed, they would hear at night buttons, you know, the buttons going off in their kitchen to the microwave. I mean, my brother used to go over there and you know, help himself to food and heat stuff up and all that. And they would hear, they heard that for quite some time. And then my mother had a dream not very long after my brother's passing where he returned to her as a deer. And she said she knew in the dream when she saw this deer, she knew that it was Donnie. And he came up to her and she said to him, son, you need to come back to me right now. And he looked at her and he said, Mama, I can't come back. He said, I'm really happy where I am. And she said, you know, all that again, and he repeated to her, and then he slowly turned and started walking away. But then as he left the dream, my mother said what happened was he took with him her deepest, most profound grief that she was experiencing over this. And she said, after that, she said, I knew I was going to be able to make it because she said, before that, I just thought I was going to die. But she said, when he left the dream, he took with him that. So just some additional outreach, not only to me at that time, but to others.
Well, and that's what I like. This was multiple. He was trying the best that he could to give others an indication that there's a lot more to death. There's no end. There's an exit and a transition. And that I had that with my grandmother I was very close to my grandmother. And when she died, I had this pit, this incredible grief pit in my stomach. And she connected telepathically to tell me what song she wanted played. I had no idea. She was a huge George Strait fan. And she wanted, "I Only Want to Dance with You." And so knowing my grandmother's history and hearing those words, it was like, oh my gosh, she's present. But when I was really, really hurting and just, you know, thinking this is it, I don't like the ending, she took it away. And so from then on, I never felt that same grief. And it was just like, and my grandmother did that for me. And I know when you have the experience of having others have these same indications, that it gives you the person who's questioning, well, is this real? It gives you, I think, a sense of comfort knowing I'm not the only one. Others are having these experiences too. This is something we're sharing. And I think that's huge.
Exactly. You're exactly right about that. And, you know, again, I feel like he's very powerful, and he still, you know, he was reaching out to everyone at that time because of the love, you know, that we all had in our family. But so, you know, those were just a few of the ways that he reached out. But and, you know, there was another instance too, where I think that my brother saved our lives, in that a couple of months after his passing, my husband and I had stayed at my dad's house, he and his wife, and they were coming down with something, or they were getting sick. And then we stayed one night and we started getting sick, both my husband and I. And long story short, I had called my sister. This was back in 1983 now, and I had crawled down literally crawl down the hallway at my dad's house, get the phone, call my sister, come over. I told her when she came over, I mean, I couldn't even stand up. I was so sick. And I told her, I said, "There's something wrong in this house. There's something wrong in this house." And so I slept on the floor with the front door open. This was in December. It was quite cold. Yeah. And I asked her to open the window in the kitchen. And the next morning, my dad managed to get up. And when he came into the living room, I said, "There's something wrong in this house. There's just something wrong in this house." I just kept repeating it. Mm-hmm. And he ended up going and checking where the furnace is. And he found that the door to the furnace had fallen off, which meant that we were suffering from carbon monoxide poisoning in that house.
Yeah.
And he fixed that. And I didn't even really know much about carbon monoxide poisoning at that point. I was 30. I never paid any attention to stuff like that. But
yeah,
really, our lives were saved by that.
Absolutely.
That intuitive message. And then, you know, for the rest of my life, I've had other after effects from this whole experience, again, into infinity. And in my book, the last chapter is an afterword that's written by Dr. Janice Holden, and she discusses how my experience is unusual because of all these after effects that I've had for the rest of my life, which are just like near-death experiencers. A lot of these after effects, that's, you know, what they have, and I ended up with those after effects, like driving down freeways or even, you know, just regular streets, wherever there are street lamps that are on at night. As you drive by, the lights go out. Of course, they eventually come back on. But as I'm passing by, or even walking down a street, that happens. Sometimes I can hear people's thoughts. I have had a much greater development of intuition and knowing what's coming up in the future. I've had guidance for things related, like, to my job, and being guided to the very, you know, best and highest position for a job. And then I also learned to read people's auras. So there's been, you know, a whole host of after effects, as I said, that relate so much more to someone who's had a near-death experience.
Paula, I hope with this information, the stuff that's happened as a result of your STE, I think you've got a really wonderful book, because there are other people who are experiencing what you're experiencing. I had that moment when my spirit guides expanded me into all that is. And I had like 2 seconds. They said, we're going to do this in two. And I felt like, yeah, right, right. You're going to do something in two. And in 2 seconds, in one, I was there. I'm like, OMG. And it was just, and I was like, there's no way I wanted to come back here. And I knew when they counted to two that I had to come back. And I'm like, yeah. But that moment.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. Like, that's how you feel. You just don't want to come back.
No.
It's just so great.
But those things that we can't integrate in that moment, they change our lives on so many levels. And so as you deal with living your life and doing dishes and taking the trash out and dealing with people who are obstinate and don't like you because, well, you're you. that's just the way it goes. And you're not going to change and they're not going to change. And you're just going to have to figure out how to let it go. Okay. So you do that.
Good
and
point.
The story you have, though, when you come up with this meld into spirit, this helps anybody who is just looking for a way to release this boundary that we have that separates us and experience more of the, what do I have in common? What is here that I can appreciate? You have that with that experience that you've developed. And that's as a result of all of your transitioning, transformation, and integrating and deep work without even focusing that this is what it is and coming back and saying, well, maybe this is going to be helpful. And it is. So I just wanted to say that part of your experience is worth another book. Okay. Just saying, not that I want you to work hard or anything, but with your brother.
Well, you know, the meld into spirit technique, it's interesting you bring that up because I have had quite a few people mention that to me, how they really love this idea as a way of connecting. And so I've been encouraged getting feedback about that. And I'm actually in the process right now of working on putting together notes, and eventually I'm coming up with a fairly short workshop related to that idea. I'm actually also doing watercolor pictures that I'm planning to use as parts of the workshop to kind of introduce different sections. But, it's a way that I think on a daily basis, wherever we are able to connect with our deeper universal consciousness without necessarily having to just go and sit in the corner and meditate.
Right.
You know, I call it a conscientious consciousness, really, where we are careful and diligent to remember to connect with our consciousness. And, you know, consciousness is like the quality or state of being aware, especially of something within oneself, and knowledge of one's own existence. And doing that in a conscious way as we're walking around or wherever we are is, as I came up with that, I was hoping it would be something that people could recognize could be very powerful for them.
Yeah.
And that seems to be the feedback that I'm getting, because it is something you can do wherever you are.
Let's step back for a moment. When you talk about the working with the watercolors, now you see auras, and there's a part in the book where you talk about, you know, you volunteered to do a couple of aura readings for some companions. And one of them, you see, he's got a great aura and lots of energy. And the other one, you see an aura that's like, whoa, what am I seeing? And then this woman has a huge event, energy shift. Could you, we don't have a lot of time, but probably 4 or 5 minutes. That would give me, This is a big thing when you identify that energy, and other people can learn to see auras too. But it gave, I think, a huge indication of the abilities that came through. Another thing as a result of your STE and shared death experience.
Yes. So, yes, you're referring to these two people who worked for me at the time. And so the woman whose aura I looked at, it was very muddy, looking. It had kind of a yellowish tone to it, but it was very muddy. And in looking at people's auras, I'd never seen one that looked like that. And I told her, I said, I don't know exactly what this means. But about 10 days later, she, you know, was in intensive care and was quite ill. But eventually she went to an energy healer and to remove some blockages in her energy is what I told her I thought was happening. And when she came back from that, she came into my office and she's sitting there started talking to me. And all of a sudden I see this gigantic, just spontaneously, I'm seeing this gigantic purple aura develop around her that most of the time when you see auras, they're transparent, but this was not transparent. It was like you couldn't see through it, and it was all around her, this deep purple. And as she was speaking to me, my eyes, I just began weeping uncontrollably. And I had to have her go to her office. I told her, I said, I don't understand what's happening. I've never seen anything like this. In fact, I've never seen anything like it since then. Mm-hmm. She went to her office, and as soon as she walked out, you know, all these things stopped. But when she called me on the phone, you know, my eyes started all over again. But that was really when she started coming into healing powers. Mm-hmm. After that, she became a Reiki master and opened her own practice. And she's been doing that now for almost 20 years and is a very powerful healer. And, you know, that was just an amazing thing to have seen happen. Again, I've never seen anything like that before. But I definitely knew that it was spiritual power coming through her that day, and it totally changed her life.
Yeah.
And my book, that was just one of the most amazing things I've ever seen in my whole life.
That's why I thought it was so incredible. And I'm picturing, you know, from Willy Wonka, Veruca Salt, the one with the big blueberry, all of a sudden she turns into a, you know, a blueberry. That kind of in your face. Okay. Yes. I ate one of those little candies. I shouldn't have done that. But it was a good thing because I think you were spot on when you said there was a blockage in her energy. And so when she had that energy work, it was time. And the thing that I also think is fantastic is that when you read somebody's aura, it is specific. There is information. It does diagnose and indicate things that are going on. And those colors are powerful and they are part of our experience. And sometimes we don't realize the colors in our environment are having a huge impact on us. And so that's another element of this. And, you know, mentioning the book again, Driving into Infinity, Living with My Brother's Spirit, is definitely something that gives people another element to these, to the experience of grief and loss. And that when you, and like you were describing with your parents, they couldn't hear what you had to present at that time. But as you work through your own grief, these other things are there. It's here. It's saying, okay, how do I get through it? And, you know, what's the next step? And that's what you're offering. And I really think that this is a powerful transition that, you know, you have managed to see your way through. And every single job you had is preparing you for what you're doing now. I mean, the education experience, the management experience, the presenter experience, my gosh, you know, it's like the one-stop shopping for being a presenter of, okay, you're going to do, and they didn't tell you. They just said, okay, here's a good job for you. Da-da-da-da-da.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. I've had some exceptional experiences come through that's provided me, you know, intuitive leads and knowledge to help me step up and step through my life in the way that's the highest and best for me. And, you know, I'm appreciative of that. And, you know, I continue to tap into that, or some things just come through, you know, without my even being in a mode where I'm, you know, I won't say meditating, but, you know, in more of a receptive state. I mean, not too very long ago, about a year ago, I was in the middle of a yoga class, and, all of a sudden, I just had this in living color vision for a minute or two, And, you know, I wasn't even thinking about anything, but I got this vision of what I think is showing me something that will be coming up in the future. So, you know, things like that happen spontaneously, and that's okay. It's just part of my experience, you know?
Okay. Wait. Okay. So that's like, I have to ask, is this a greater vision from the broader view or a personal vision for your life? What kind of vision?
It was a personal vision related to my life. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, the things I get via information are things related to maybe others or a broader view, but, you know, it just varies. And again, it just varies in terms of when some things come through. A lot of times I will go and walk in a park and just talk to spirit as I'm walking. And a lot of times if, you know, I'm wanting to make a change or I need guidance on something, I'll ask about that. Right. And then suddenly as I'm walking around, I'll be shown a vision. Sometimes you know, it's like showing me a path and I'm going up a path and then I'm going through this gate. And so some of it I kind of have to interpret,
right.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
This is going to be a little while and this is going to happen. But yeah, that's how it happens a lot of times.
And in the book too, you develop a code basically with your brother. If the picture's face down, if the picture's sideways, if the cat is facing this, I thought that was brilliant.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I mean, and my brother still does these things with photos, his photo. And the other day I was in here, just as another example, I was in here in my office and I was reading some information off the computer. And all of a sudden, as I'm sitting here, really, this is the first time I've ever had this happen, where something with these pictures happened while I was here. Most of the time, I mean, for the rest of my life, it's always been I've walked in, the picture's been down or whatever.
Yeah.
But as I'm sitting here, one of the frame pictures that sits inside this bookcase and some other pictures I have, and this picture is all with my brother and my sister and I, the framed one. And it fell, and then it knocked off onto the floor this other smaller picture that's in front of it. And again, it's my brother and sister and I on this couch. We're acting real crazy. And this happened while I was sitting here and I jumped out of my seat. I mean, it was all quiet.
Yeah.
And I think he did that just to scare me because I was really deep in thought over here and I wasn't looking at it. And I jumped up from the seat and I walked over to the bookcase and I said, I know you're here, Donnie.
Okay, let me give you
cut it out.
this is huge because it's the three of you. Your life is about to get a whole lot more fun. And you are having fun that you deserve, fun that you put on the back burner, fun that you didn't even know was possible, especially at this time of your life. He is your biggest cheerleader. And he is right behind you saying, get out there. And I'm right behind you. I got this. We got this. He is so much a part of who you are. I almost think you were twin souls is what this is about. But so you couldn't do this without him. He couldn't do this without you. The two of you have a purpose and you are doing a tremendous, I think, service by sharing this. And I know it took a long time, but it took exactly as long as it needed to take. Does that make sense?
Yes. Why? Thank you for that that observation for me. That's so interesting. And you know, I do feel like my brother and I were like twins or something. Just our personalities and our countenance and the way we are. We were very much alike in that regard. My sister, you know, is 10 years younger, as I pointed out, and her personality and the way she is, of course, she's so much younger. She, you know, she has a different type of personality. Not that we don't get along well, we do, but
okay.
I, It's interesting you said about the twin thing.
You got to go. I'm going to leave it on that note. And again, Paula Lenz, Driving into Infinity, Living with My Brother's Spirit. I'm going to interview you again for another show, but I really appreciate it. I'm going to put a blog up about it on Wendy's Coffee House. Thank you. Thank you for your time. And I really appreciate, if you're listening, the fact that you are open to all of this, because this is how we grow. Paula, thank you.
Thank you.
And continue listening to Conscious Living on Empower Radio. We got some new shows in the pipeline. Thank you. Just remember, wherever you are, keep an open mind. Great things are happening and you're part of it. Think positive. It always comes back to you. Till next time. See ya.